ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. I have a super fun guest today, Joseph Fulman, Vice President of Marketing at The Onion. Joe is a brilliant strategist who heads their marketing and audience development. He came to The Onion after a decade of working at ad agencies like Arnold, Stardom Mediavest Group, and Greater Than One. Joe is also one of the co-founders of Reunify, a Los Angeles-based predictive analytics consultancy. He has an interesting perspective on how people consume digital content and the future of it all. Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Let's dive right in. Over the last decade, satire has played an increasingly important role in terms of how Americans consume news. People regularly get their news from satirical news publishers and programmers like John Oliver, Samantha Bee, The Daily Show, etc. What you do is different at The Onion, but you also manage to speak truth to power through absurdity. How has the political landscape over the last year changed your promotional strategy?
You know, I don't know that the political landscape has really fundamentally changed our strategy in terms of promotions. You know, it puts us in an interesting situation on the editorial side at times when, you know, it's hard to tell the difference between news and satire.
Well, that was sort of where I was heading, in that obviously what The Onion does in satire isn't fake news, but sometimes there's sort of like a gray zone of truth, and a lot of Onion articles, which are obviously fake, sometimes if I read a real headline, I'm not sure, right? You know, currently, if it's real or satire. And so I was wondering if there's any challenge with that in terms of how you communicate.
Yeah, I think there's some sensitivity to that on the editorial side. And really the goal of The Onion is to use satire to really, you know, get to truths that you couldn't with other kinds of storytelling. So
right.
The editorial guys look at somebody being confused as sort of a failure, you know, like there is not a goal to ever deceive anybody about sort of what they're interacting with or what really the outlook of a specific piece of content is. Our real objective is always to get to those eternal truths. And, you know, with the specifically regarding the promotions, you know, there's been a lot of conversation in the media about, the News Integrity Initiative from Facebook and, you know, similar efforts on the Twitter side, similar efforts on the Google side to really cut down on the proliferation of fake news, although I think like even that, you know, is a charged term.
Well, right. I mean, it's sort of, you know, cut down on rank propaganda from either end of the spectrum, maybe is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, we're really specifically exempted on some level from a lot of that stuff.
Well, of course, because you're not really, you're satire. I mean, you're not presenting it as true. I mean, that's not what it is. It's just that some of the stuff that is true is absurd.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a world where there are more and more satire sites, I think if most people are aware of one satirical news organization in the world, it is The Onion. And if they're aware of two satirical news organizations in the world, it's probably The Onion and Clickhole. So I think our sites face fewer hurdles than you know, properties that are just getting started now in kind of carving out a voice and carving out sort of a promotional cadence that allows them to keep the conceit pure in how content is presented. And I think for us, you know, the beauty of being exempted from a lot of these concerns that other publishers might have for us is just that we don't really have to change the way that we present a post on Facebook so that we don't get flagged, because we've always been flagged for these types of things.
Right.
People who are interested in trying to like limit our reach. I think some people see one of our headlines and try to react in a way that would like, you know, they want to try to hurt us by giving some negative feedback, which is obviously they're right, but it's nothing new for us. So while things are probably more charged than they have been in a long time, it really doesn't change the way that the Onion functions as an institution.
Huh. Okay. So that's interesting. I never really had thought thought about the sort of the faction of people who sort of their stock and trade is outrage, humor, it's not funny kind of thing, I suppose. I had never really thought about that. It seems what I was actually trying to understand, and it's interesting that you actually just continue, if I'm understanding it properly, you continue to go as you've been going, is I was wondering if it was difficult to cut a swath or introduce to new people. I mean, certainly I've been aware of the Onion for quite some time, and I think it's hilarious, but for people who are just coming of age and in the swim, we live in interesting times where, the gray lady is suspect, by certain people. And it's just sort of strange, just strange times. And so it's out of my experience. And so I was wondering if it was different, but it sounds like you just are continuing as you've been. And because you have this established brand, that you're pretty solid there. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think though, we are always changing incrementally, but we're essentially a conservative institution. You know, there are values to how the Onion operationally functions that are pretty consistent, like at least from a period around, I don't know, 96, 97 through 2017, there are things that you look at an Onion article and you can tell that it's an Onion article in the way that a headline is written or the way that an image is created. Those things map to the objects of our satire.
Right.
Which really are the New York Times, which are AP style, which are, Washington Post. And to some extent, I think we have to change as newspaper readership goes down, and some of the jokes about print newspapers no longer play the same way they had in the past. But I think that's like a bigger change for us, just in terms of like overall media literacy and familiarity with newspapers, familiarity with AP style,
right?
Then specifically things around the unique political climate of the age of Trump. That said, there are a ton of challenges in just pushing out funny stuff that is far enough beyond what is real that it is actually a joke. But I think that's like an editorial conversation largely.
Right. Sure.
A marketing one. Because I think, we have the luxury of figuring out how to get these jokes that have already made it through a filter of like 150 rejects to every except by the time it gets to us. So we're really, really lucky in that we have fantastic material to work with.
Right, right. I saw a piece that you had been, an interview with you on YouTube, where you were talking about the different social media platforms and how their rise and relative power vis-a-vis one another has had an impact on the Onion. And I was wondering if you could share some of that. It was specifically how you were thinking about Facebook and then the other platforms.
Well, I mean, Facebook is outsized in importance for us and every other publisher because it drives... if we are getting 60% of our traffic in a normal month from some social media, 80% of that traffic is coming from Facebook. If you add in, engagement metrics into things that we care about. The importance of Facebook plus Instagram really starts to kind of dwarf everybody else. I think if you look at the minutes spent per month in YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and just kind of tally them up, like the number for everyone is like 55 minutes a day, 56 minutes a day, something like that. And then the number specifically for Facebook properties, meaning Instagram and Facebook.com, are 50 minutes, I think 51 minutes, something like that.
So wow.
It's like this humongous percentage of the total is really just time spent in newsfeed. And so presentation of content in newsfeed is, from a marketing perspective, probably the most impactful area to try to optimize.
And
we're not unique in really trying to crack the code on what works in that environment. But at the same time, like, you know, it is not necessarily a set of objectives that you get compensated by Facebook for completely optimizing. So, you know, there are many content types that I think work best for us as sort of social exclusives. But whenever, you know, a shareable photo on Clickhole goes up or a video is posted natively to Facebook, it is really kind of a direct sacrifice of revenue to our fans, because we know that is the place that they'll get the most play.
I see.
Trying to kind of backwards engineer what the right mix of, you know, service to fans versus insistence on making money looks like is something that we're always toying with. You know, the balance of what goes directly to site versus, you know, is something experienced in feed? You know, what do we put into instant articles?
There's right.
Things that live, you know, exclusively on our mobile site. All of those things end up being really, really important because there is no other player in the marketplace that has the power of Facebook when it comes to, you know, minutes per day, minutes per month.
Right. One of the things that's sort of big buzzword in content marketing in 2016 was influencers. Do you use influencers at all?
Not as such. I mean, like there's something that is, you know, sort of best experienced anonymously from The Onion. Like we don't have bylines for our writers.
Right.
And that's a very, you know, purposeful decision because this is kind of,
well, because it's the Onion and not that particular writer, right?
It's the Onion and not that particular writer. And I think the specificity of where it's coming from, it can kind of interfere with how you look at a joke. So, you know, we don't necessarily go out of our way to court those relationships, but I do know that we're lucky to have a lot of fans in the world of comedy. So we benefit from that a little bit, but I think kind of trying to force that.
But that's sort of organic. I mean, that's an organic thing they're choosing to do. You're not compensating them, right?
We're definitely not compensating them. We try to compensate as few people as possible.
Absolutely. Some digital publishers like BuzzFeed use in-house employees as influencers. So that's sort of do you do any of that?
Yeah. I mean, on the AV Club side, I mean, people are promoting their own stuff, but I think that is the self-interest of having your content perform rather than any kind of corporate directive. I mean, at the end of the day, like reach is such a fickle metric when it comes to specifically Facebook, but Twitter to a large extent, now that is also an algorithmic feed as well.
Right.
That, you know, the impact of even a writer with a pretty big following, it tends to be relatively limited in comparison to, you know, entrances that are coming from social, from our kind of corporate accounts plus. Oh. Research on site, like it ends up being a little bit of a drop in the bucket. So moving the needle for us, it tends to be, you know, shaping the presentation from our our social handles that the, our own social handles on the individual title side.
Right. One thing I was curious about is video, and obviously digital video viewership is increasing year over year at an astonishing clip, and social video generates, you know, 1,200% more shares than text and images combined. How do you adapt to that? And I know, for instance, and we can talk about later about your content studio and what you're doing with brands is often in the video space, but how does video function just for the Onion proper? And it, to speaking, you know, sort of to the change that's happening in the print industry, how are you adjusting for that?
Sure. I think there's kind of two things going on with regard to that. One is there is a general move that you know, kind of related to your last question, Facebook is kind of pushing the marketplace towards short form content, whether that is written content or video content. And in either case, it kind of forces the hand of editorial organizations to create what will do well in feed. Mm-hmm. And that kind of pains me. And I kind of hate being the messenger for that reality to editorial people, because they hate that. And I kind of agree with them that like, our editorial organization, our editorial values as an organization should not be defined by any outside party, much less a partner like Facebook.
Do they give you like, this is your target length? I mean, how specific a guidance are they providing? Or is it just something that you're monitoring the success and engagement levels and you're seeing trends? Or are they saying, yoo-hoo, this is how we're structuring things, this is how what will be given preference? Or is it a little of both?
We receive a mixture of advice from Facebook. A lot of the advice on content is relatively general for purposes. The majority of what we end up using from the Facebook side is information about how to take advantage of new routes to monetization, whether it's, you know, more effectively driving clicks off site, you know, better ways to place ads in our instant articles, or, you know, how to use a new ad product like AdBrick with the roll ads in editorial video now. In those areas are places where, you know, we can get some constructive information out of the Facebook side. But for our brands, and, you know, I have a sneaking suspicion while our brands are probably more different than others from the pack, you know, our concerns are very unique to satire in many cases. I think a lot of the advice on how best to use these social channels comes from your own analytics. And our in-house analytics team works really closely with our editorial team as well as the marketing team to make sure we have the best information about how our content has been doing. That's something that, you know, we're always kind of in the loop of reviewing and trying to get a little bit more out of the content that we're creating, either by changing the form factor, changing the presentation, you know, rethinking the cadence of how it's released, or even in some cases thinking about, you know, where we're trying to push in order to take advantage of, you know, one channel for monetization for another. But those tend to be areas where we end up working with Facebook the most is, you know, how do we turn Facebook into a business for us? Because
right.
You know, on its own, Facebook is not trying to pay you out too much money,
wow,
even if they are genuinely fantastic partners to us who we love to work with.
So when looking at the social media metrics, what would you say are the top two metrics, the metrics that matter most to you guys? What are you looking at?
You know, I think we are on some level looking at the growth of the brand, either as a function of, you know, fans and followers, but probably more so aggregate reach at the 28-day level if we're talking Facebook, in, you know, reach over different periods of time based on what different social channels will allow us to see. But, you know, from the Facebook perspective, I think we keep a pretty close watch on 28-day reach. The rest of, I think, our effort goes into driving page views, uniques, and RPM, just normal publisher stuff. Right. And the normal publisher stuff is very much linked into, you know, how we're driving traffic, where that traffic is coming from, how much we're paying for it, if we're paying for it. That stuff ends up being, you know, closely aligned with any kind of change we would ever make on the ad op side or the programmatic stack to change our RPMs. All of that is closely related to how traffic is coming into the site and honestly, you know, how we want to view research on a specific feature type or with a specific type of page layout. That stuff ends up being super important to how we strategically approach what we do with our content broadly.
Is most of your traffic generated from social, or is it organic search and other things? I mean, what is the mix? Where is your traffic coming from, or does it really vary a lot?
It varies a fair amount. I would say most of the time, about 60% of our traffic, depending on site, it's more or less, but I would say across our sites, it's probably about 60% of our traffic. If we're looking at entrances,
yeah,
that is coming from Facebook.
So not just social, but Facebook in particular, or?
So 60% of our traffic comes from social, 80% of that 60%.
Facebook. Okay. That's what I wanted to understand better. Now, drilling into I've been using up a lot of time just generally about the Onion, but you have this content studio, your branded content studio, and what you're doing for brands. Now, you, as you talked about the Onion having a pretty conservative voice and approach and really looking at the conservative institutions it was satirizing, how do you apply that mindset to various brands? What do you look at their voice and satirize them? Do you use your voice? And how does that work?
I mean, usually we're trying to solve some kind of pretty specific strategic problem for a brand. So there is an element that is related to sort of the Onion's voice oftentimes, but most of the content that our studio, Onion Labs, creates is content that will never, you know, directly have an Onion ding on it. Most of that content runs either as, you know, broadcast ads or videos that run out of the handles of our clients. So for a lot of the content, it's less about, you know, bringing the credibility of the Onion to the creative than it is bringing the creative voices that we have to bear on the problems that a brand brings us to solve.
Yeah, that was actually
I'd say more often than not.
So you're leveraging your creative staff to solve these problems for brands. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're really lucky in that we got into the branded content game pretty early. So we've had since 2013 to really hone our process here. We have a mixture of staff. Some come from a traditional comedy writing background. A lot of them, their start here at The Onion, but we have people, you know, come on the editorial side from all over the place. Mm-hmm. And we mix them with really, really talented copywriters that are coming from the ad world. So we can kind of bring a mixture of the right people depending on what the project is. You know, sometimes somebody comes to us and they want to sponsor a program that would probably still happen without a sponsor, a direct sponsor on the editorial side. And in that case, it's, you know, pretty simple conversation about, you know, how to represent the brand as part of the program. That is probably a vast oversimplification of the tightrope walk that our account team has to undertake. You know, in some ways those are sort of simpler engagements than when we create, you know, some kind of custom video for a client that will run on our sites or from our handles in a way where we're kind of putting the Onion, you know, humor seal of approval on a piece of content that's probably the area where there is, you know, the most back and forth is just figuring out how to create something that is acceptable to the sensibilities of a brand that is also acceptable to the sensibilities of our own brand.
Right.
And get the job done at the end of the day. Because I think sometimes, you know, in the overlapping Venn of things that are safe enough for a brand and funny enough for The Onion, that still might not solve the most important problem, which is a piece of a really effective advertising. And that is what, over the past almost 5 years, we've been really trying to get better and better at. And I think we progressively have, in the 2 years that I've been here, gotten much better at just figuring out where to come in, like what level of ha-ha funny versus telling a product story are we able to get to?
Right.
And what level is appropriate for you know, the strategic challenge? I think that is way, way harder than just writing something that is funny, because I think really anybody can with the right team come up with a funny joke, but to then have the sensibilities of an advertiser in mind and to be able to put it into a, you know, polished format that will you know, perform in newsfeed, to be frank,
right?
Like that's the real kind of art of what our labs team does.
So do you, when clients come to you, are you bringing not only this creative force to bear, but also you're bringing your strategy and your understanding of the various feeds and different platforms? You're also bringing that, or do they come to you with their own strategies and theories about what will play?
Okay, so I think that they decide to write a check or not based on
true.
Whether we can fit with how they see the world. I think genuinely though, very few publishers are so far outside of you know, what would work for a brand that like we would be a total miss there.
Right.
I think on the strategy side with regard to how to bring a campaign to life, that's an area where we're definitely, most of our clients take advantage of the team that we've put together. So in our office here in Chicago, you know, beyond copywriters and comedy writers and marketing people and ad ops people, there's a team that just works on media planning and media activation for these campaigns. So, you know, they sit with us, but not generally working on the editorial stuff, and our focus really on optimizing yield from the creative that we create on our side for brands. So that team, I think, really has existed in some form for about 2 years. That has really changed what we're able to do, because we can manage, you know, spend as effectively as any ad agency that I've worked at. We can plan with as much, you know, strategic rigor as any agency that I've ever worked at. Yet we have, you know, access to talent that is actually unique, you know,
right.
Like things that other people can't bring to the table. So, you know, there are differences in how an engagement actually, you know, happens that have to do with whether, you know, we are working with a media agency or a creative agency or a brand directly. All three of those things happen all the time, but you know, each of those kind of goes down a different path in terms of how a project is managed, you know, what resources get put into place. But the beauty is, you know, from, you know, media planning and ad ops through 3D animation, all of that happens in-house here at The Onion in Chicago. So we have like a 10,000 square foot soundstage and the largest curved green stage in Chicago.
Huh.
So we can really shoot anything. We have a huge team of people who work across both our art on the sponsored side as well as on the editorial side. And that includes resources who do everything, you know, film editing, 3D, all of that is sort of within the scope of things that we can do for a brand when and if it makes sense to you know, bring those groups from within the company in into the engagement. It really depends on what we're trying to do, how many of those different resources get tapped to be a part of a specific campaign.
Right. One last question, Univision and the Fusion Media Group, and how does this, can you just describe what this larger portfolio is and how the new scale has adjusted what you're doing, or if it has?
It has in many ways, and you know, many things have not changed. there's a ton of advantages of being part of a big company. There's a lot of areas where we were never able to invest that we've been able to put resources against. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of opportunities, I think, specifically with regard to television and movies. You know, in the couple of months that we've been part of Univision, we've announced our multi-picture deal with Lionsgate. We've done a couple of TV shows on Fusion, developing a bunch of TV shows with external networks. And all of that has been, you know, made possible and in no small part by collaboration with the larger, you know, Univision entity. We take advantage of a lot of their sort of back end services. You know, that stuff has been fantastic for us in allowing us to kind of focus on content creation, to focus on monetization versus, you know, all the ancillary things that a small publisher really needs to worry about. It at the end of the day is scale that allows us to kind of compete at the next level, because so many of our competitors in the humor space, you know, either have been part of, you know, a larger media conglomerate for 15 years at this point, or they're still going it alone. And, you know, I think that, you know, at different stages of development, that, you know, being part of a big company can impact your ability to try new things creatively. But we, I think, kind of hit at the right time in the development of The Onion and Clickhole and AV Club, because we have these very established voices. We have an audience that you know, loves our stuff, and because of that, there is no big pressure to kind of pivot in any specific direction the way, you know, if we had been some kind of startup, we would have had to. But at the same time, you know, we can go in on the sales side and have a conversation as the Fusion Media Group and bring 90 million leaks to the table. That is a huge advantage, you know, being able to be a big company and still be able to kind of function as a small company here in Chicago.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest, Joe Fullman. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.